Well, ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, welcome. I'm Carl Indefirth. I'm the Wadhwani Chair in U.S.-India Policy Studies at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS, here in Washington. It's my pleasure to welcome you here today for this event, the rollout of a report that we are releasing today entitled BIT and Beyond. BIT, of course, I'm sure everyone here knows that's Bilateral Investment Treaty. Bilateral Investment Treaty, BIT and Beyond, Advancing the U.S.-India Economic Relationship. We have a great panel that will be discussing this report. Matthew Stokes, the principal author. I'll introduce everyone in more detail later. Ambassador Arun Singh of the Indian Embassy and Diane Farrell, the Executive Vice President of the U.S.-India Business Council. But we will start with our principal speaker, Senator Mark Warner, the junior, soon-to-be senior senator of Virginia. I actually had a moment listening to NPR this morning. They did an interview with Jim Webb, and they referred to him as a senior senator. I said, NPR has finally gotten something wrong. He's not the senior senator. Mark Warner is. Then we checked, and we know that you will become the senior senator. In 2 weeks' time. He is also the co-chair of the U.S.-India Senate Caucus. The Senate India Caucus with Senator John Cornyn of Texas. And as co-chair, we're delighted to have you here for this rollout of this report. Let me just say a couple of words here about the work of the Senate India Caucus and the two co-chairs. In this leadership position, the two senators are making, I believe, their mark and a very positive contribution to the further advancement of the U.S.-India relationship. It's a relationship that I said recently has been benefiting from what I refer to as the CBO effect. Now, up on the Hill, you think CBO, Congressional Budget Office. No, it's the Clinton-Bush-Obama effect, which is it has been a bipartisan advancement of a relationship with one of the key emerging powers of the 21st century. So that has been a defining feature of the U.S.-India relationship. The relationship has also benefited during this period from the strong bipartisan support on Capitol Hill. And I think it's here that Senators Warner and Cornyn are taking this support to a new level. You will see in the appendix to the report, I trust you all have received a copy, in the appendix to our report, the letter that the two senators sent, along with some of their colleagues, to President Obama 1 year ago this month, urging him to move forward on a bit with India. Actually, our report today should probably be an appendix to your letter, since your letter came out first, but whatever the case, looking in the same direction. More recently, in fact, just this month, the two senators co-sponsored an amendment to the Defense Authorization Bill calling on the Pentagon to report on its vision for defense trade relations with India and how the two countries might cooperate more fully. I should also mention here another legislative initiative that involves Senator Warner that relates to India and some other countries as well, the Startup Act 2.0. It's bipartisan. I think you've heard bipartisan mentioned several times here. I think you see a trend with Senator Warner. He's very bipartisan, which is very welcomed. This legislation creates initiatives or incentives, including a category of visas for immigrant entrepreneurs who establish businesses in the U.S. that create American jobs. The proposal also creates a green card for foreign students who have graduated from U.S. universities with degrees in science, technology, engineering, and math, skills we are in great need of here. Unfortunately, right now, the U.S. approach to those with these so-called STEM degrees is to say, here's your degree, now go home. We think that that ought to change. Another way to move the U.S.-India relationship further. So on all of these fronts, concrete steps are being taken to advance the relationship. And we greatly appreciate the work of Senator Warner and his colleague, Senator Cornyn of Texas, in their leadership position here. I would also, if I may, in closing, I'd like to express my appreciation to Senator Warner for all you are doing, again, in a bipartisan manner to help our country avoid going over the fiscal cliff. The fact is that if the U.S. takes that plunge, the effect will be felt not just here, but worldwide, including with India. So we're all in this big boat together, and we wish you great success in what you're doing. And if you have to leave at any moment to go fix it, please, you are, it would be understood. With that, let me ask Senator Warner, and let's appreciate his being with us.
Well, thank you, Rick. Thank you for those comments. Thank you for that generous introduction. I will only comment on the front end. As someone who has been, before I get to the subject at hand, as you and some in the room know, obsessed about the debt and deficit crisis, and I only wish I was in that room right now with the president and the speaker. I do get concerned that if there was ever a case where it seems like they might need a broker or an investment banker, and something I've had a previous career in, so I only wish I was going to be called at any moment. In the meantime, I, like most of the rest of us, are waiting, hoping, and praying that we can avoid this fiscal calamity, which will have not only an effect upon America, but quite honestly, upon the whole world's economy. And again, Rick, Rick has been a friend for a long time. He and my also very good friend, Ramesh Wanwani, has been doing great work at CSIS. And I appreciate that. And this comprehensive work on the BIT is a good progress forward. I recall, I think it was the last time, we see each other a lot, but the last time it was kind of a CSIS event was, I believe, in back in 2011, when I had just taken on, along with my good friend John Cornyn, the co-chairmanship of the Senate caucus, and we've come a long way. And I, again, commend the work here. I also want to say to Matthew and Diane, who did the real good work on this project, congratulations. I haven't seen Ron here yet this morning, but you know, as the USIBC is an important link as well in terms of the economic relationships between India and America. And again, someone along with USIS or CSIS that we in the caucus look to for policy guidelines. And to my good friend Ambassador Singh, we have had many, many occasions to be together here at the embassy, and while I can't say we've agreed on every item over the last year, both he and Ambassador Rao have been, again, great friends to the caucus, and as we constantly say, this relationship between India and the United States, and I like your CBO analysis there, the evolution over the last three administrations, bipartisan. Part of that evolution has meant that we have gone, and I can't think of any other two other major nations in the world, that the relationship has changed as dramatically over the last 15 to 20 years. And we've gone through that blush of kind of from wariness to friends. And that friends, you know, it's great to make big top line announcement as friends. You know, the nitty gritty is to build this into a partnership, true partnerships. And with any kind of partnering relationship, even with a good friend, you're going to have some bumps along the way. And I again want to thank the work on the BIT. This is something that when I came on as co-chair of the caucus, we felt we needed to kind of reduce the caucus a little bit, take on a next priority along with the traditional list, and the BIT was one of those initiatives that really I think has gained some steam. Let me also give you a quick report of the caucus. We've grown in the last year, we've grown the caucus by 50%, and we're proud to say that the U.S.-India or the caucus is the largest bilateral caucus in the United States Senate. It is also the largest bilateral caucus in the House, and I can assure you that with a lot of the new members I've already coming in. I've already talked to a number of them, and our goal is to get a 60-plus vote filibuster-proof number in the caucus, and I hope we will have that sometime in the coming year. I was also very proud to lead a 10-day congressional delegation earlier in the year to India, including the first ever congressional delegation to Hyderabad, and as well as one of the first delegations in many, many years to Kolkata that was very powerful. And I want to also salute Mark Bruner from my staff, who, is, along with Monica, has carried a lot of the work in our office. I also think there are other things to celebrate. We've had, after again, some disappointments a year ago in the defense sector. Now some things to celebrate. We have $9 billion in deals, including, of course, the recent $4 billion Boeing deal. As Rick mentioned, we continue to work from our side in the defense bill to strengthen the U.S.-India defense collaboration and cooperation. We think there's great opportunities to promote with our friends in the Indian defense agencies, greater collaboration, greater exchange. But we, on our side, have to do a better job of making sure that we can actually sell some of the products and transfer some of this technology to India, who I think will be a long-term ally, and we have so many common ties in terms of our security interest. A little beyond the kind of straight business and defense, one of the things the caucus was proud to take part in as well was that wonderful celebration at the Kennedy Center earlier this year in Maxim, India, where we were part of that month-long celebration. One of the things, again, that we feel in the caucus we want to do is, yes, promote economic, business, strategic ties, but also continue to support cultural ties as well. The enormous power of the Indian American diaspora in America is an emerging economic, political, but it is also an emerging cultural collaboration that we think we can be part of. On a more personal note, I'm very proud of the fact that while we were in India, we brokered the first ever, with the help of the Wadhwani Foundation, agreement between the Indian education ministries and the Virginia Community College system, where we can collaborate on skills training. Again, an area I think that offers enormous, enormous potential opportunity for both nations. And then, again, on a more recent note, as a cell phone guy, I just got an iPhone recently, and I'm still figuring how to turn it on and off. So if I, that may be, if that was the call, I'm in real trouble. You know, I often say, as some of you who may know my background, I was in the wireless industry for 20 years, co-founder of Nextel. It means I'm also the only politician that says, even when I'm speaking, leave your cell phones on. When they go off, don't bother me at all. We've also had some recent good news, and I want to congratulate Ambassador Singh and the government in Delhi. I know you've got your own set of political challenges back home, as we do here, but I commend the Singh government for pushing through the legislation on foreign direct investment in multi-brand retail. That was one of the issues that we raised every site during our Codel to India, and we can put that on the checked off completed list. As now back to the subject to hand the bit, I look forward to hearing, or at least Mark and Monica look forward to hearing, as I run off to one session after I get done talking, all of the results of this study. I think that, as you mentioned, Rick, we think that this is an area where progress is being made. I wish we could say we think this will be done on date X. Mark quickly said, don't set an exact timeline on when this will be done beforehand. I'm going to disregard that. Let's hope that we can celebrate in a year from now a close to completion of this process. I would again say that those of us in the caucus do think that nudging of the administration with our letter a year past hopefully at least got the ball rolling. Now with the elections over in America, you know, there's going to be a new team at State Treasury and Commerce, and I want to publicly commit that this new enhanced U.S.-India Senate caucus will do all we can to nudge along the folks on our side to make this BIT treaty a priority. I mentioned already progress, one of the good signs from the Singh government on multi-brand FDI. you know, we think that there's tremendous potential with a BIT treaty for both America and India in terms of protect and promoting growth, promoting American investments abroad. We think as well that this is going to become more and more of a two-way street as we look at Indian companies investing in America. They both need the protections of a BIT. We think this will put our companies on an equal footing with other international counterparties in India as India has moved forward on BIT-type treaties with other nations. We put American companies at enormous disadvantage if we don't have that kind of equal parity in terms of how we're dealing with. And obviously, the BIT will lay the groundwork for what I hope, and again, not supposed to mention this, but I hope we get the BIT under our belt that we can move towards the next big step, which would be a full trade treaty that will be down the line, but has to be part of our longer term goal in terms of the relationship between the United States and India. I want to make a couple of other comments about other areas where I hope we can strengthen the relationship that will be goals of the caucus going forward this year. Infrastructure, one of the items that we heard time and time again in India was as India appropriately looks at building out and meeting its 21st century infrastructure needs, that there's enormous, enormous opportunities for American companies, American expertise in this field. I still think there's more talk than action in infrastructure, but I would challenge our friends at CSIS and the USIBC, you know, to give us a specific to-do list from a policy standpoint of how we can make that potential a reality over the coming year. Next, energy. I think the blackouts over the past year in India have pointed out that the Indian energy infrastructure is an area that cannot be kicked down the road anymore. We ought to take advantage of this moment in time at looking at how not only in terms of power generation where we've had American companies in the past, but really all across the board in energy infrastructure, how we can do greater collaboration. On our side, we need to look at visa reform. Rick mentioned the fact of the STEM visas. That is important, but there are other visa points that also need to be dealt with. Another part of our Startup 2.0 legislation, which is bipartisan, Chris Coons and I on the Democratic side, Marco Rubio and Jerry Moran on the Republican side, we do look at the STEM visa. We also look at a creation of a new entrepreneur's visa, which is particularly important because while both sides celebrate and talk about the need to increase the number of H-1B visas, let's face it, H-1B visas oftentimes turn into almost involuntary servitude. And if you are that individual on an H-1B visa and you've got that great idea to start that new company, and you can demonstrate you can raise some capital and hire some folks, why not do it here in America? We hope that will be part of any kind of, again, immigration reform. And I would also add one that we hear constantly from our Indian partners on this. And Ambassador Singh, this is, I know of growing concern from many, many Indian companies, is the fact that on temporary visas, in effect, viewing, and some of the data seems to be pretty compelling, of slow rolling within the State Department of granting the temporary visas back and forth for Indian workers, maybe not to come over here on a permanent basis, but even on a temporary basis. And that needs more attention. And while we've been paid some lip service recognition from state, one of the things I commit to do is to move that into actually documentable results because we've got to have the exchange of quality folks back and forth, and that again helps both countries. Those are some of the areas of progress, some of the areas of concern, and again, Ambassador Singh knows that I can't go through my laundry list without mentioning areas that we need to work on this coming year. And that's market. One is market access. I think that I would encourage my friends back in Delhi to continue to reconsider some of the rules and regulations imposed on local content requirements in terms of preferential market access. This may be the only crowd where I get nods as opposed to glazed eyes over preferential market access requirements, but this is really important. This is really, really important. If the Indian government continues to ramp up its local content requirements to the point that outside entities can't participate, that is a challenge. Just as we hear from the other side, we want to buy some more of your defense stuff, but if you continue to have technologies and products that can't come to India, you restrict our ability to be the true partners. This is preferential market access is one area that I look forward to working with the ambassador and his colleagues in Delhi on. And then, as someone like all good politicians who always say, thank you for multi-brand retail, that was yesterday, what are you going to do for me tomorrow? I do hope that we look at raising the cap on foreign direct investment in insurance. I do think insurance and banking is an area as well that we've talked about for some time, but we continue to need some more progress. And I would be remiss, I know you're giving me the hook, I would be remiss, and I think it's extraordinary that you came up with these talking points and didn't mention civilian nuclear, which still lies out there. We think about, again, all of the grand announcements around civilian nuclear, and yet the fact that here we are years later, and we still have to work out some of those liability issues. Both sides need to bring some fresh views to that topic. Again, I hope that we in the caucus can be of assistance. So with going on way too long, because unfortunately that wasn't the president or Boehner calling me to get into the room and dealing with the fiscal cliff, I will again say my thanks to everybody at CSIS, my thanks to folks at the India-U.S. Business Council, my thanks to the folks at the embassy and others, and to all of you. I continue to believe, as it will become self-evident, this will be, if not the key, one of the key relationships for our country in the coming decades. There are so many areas where just our individual national interests align. Threats of terrorism, emerging challenges in Asia, military cooperation, enormous collaboration economically, the enormous potential and power of the Indian American diaspora to be that kind of cultural business and link between our two great nations. I am so proud to have be able to play at least some role in continued development of this relationship, and I look forward to Mark and my team getting the full results of the panel's work, and much more work to do in the coming year. Thank you all so much.
I wanted to mention to Senator Warner again the great appreciation for the work that he's doing in the Senate with the Senate India Caucus. And to underscore the importance of this subject and all that he said, this week the National Intelligence Council issued their 2030 report, Alternative Worlds, I think it was entitled. They do this every few years, looking at what the world's going to be. That report said that India, they expect to be the rising economic power in 2030, as China is today. So the expectations are very high. Serious people recognize where this relationship is going. And quite frankly, Senator Warner and the caucus are in the vanguard of this. So thank you very much. And now go work on the cliff.
Work on the cliff.
Work on the cliff. So, ladies and gentlemen, I think we are privileged to have had such a great opening keynote address for this discussion of Bin and Beyond. I'd like to sort of rewind back to, again, welcome you all for being here. I just want to say a few words about what we hope to accomplish. Would like to say a word to begin with about the chair that I have at CSIS, the Wadhwani Chair in U.S.-India Policy Studies. We have a rather ambitious goal there, which is to unlock the full potential of the U.S.-India relationship, something that I've been working on since I was the Assistant Secretary of State for South Asia under President Clinton. Now, we have, I will admit, that we have not fully achieved our goal yet. That full potential has not been achieved as of yet, but I am hoping that we can make a little more progress in that regard this morning and at least show the way for how we can do this over time. I would also first like to thank, I don't know if Mark Bruner left with the Senator, I do want to thank Senator Warner's office and Mark Bruner for helping us to arrange this wonderful venue for today's unveiling release of the report. We thought it was appropriate to do this on Capitol Hill because since it is a treaty, and if the negotiations are successful, that treaty will come here for possible ratification. So we thought that starting this here was a good way to do it. I also want to acknowledge, by the way, Dan Glickman, former Secretary of Agriculture under President Clinton. Great to have you here with us. Now, as you know, the subject that we're going to be looking at is the BIT. It is still being negotiated. We do see BIT, however, in a larger, if you will, mosaic of closer U.S.-India cooperation and partnership, hence the title BIT and Beyond. This is a part of a larger way of looking at how to build that relationship. And for that reason, we're going to do as much talking about beyond BIT. And indeed, Senator Warner touched on that in his remarks, where he said that he didn't think that he should go into this at any length, but he did talk about the possibility down the road of a free trade agreement. So with those remarks, what I'd like to do is to join my colleagues at the table, introduce them, and have the principal author of the report, Matthew Stokes, give you an overview of the report and its recommendations. So we won't have to keep using our valuable time back and forth. Let me join you over here. The microphone's on. Is that working? Making sure the mic's
just one works.
Mechanical. Is that working? Yes, it is. All right, we will share. We will share. One thing that we are very pleased about in the looking to the prospects for a BIT agreement is the fact that recently when President Obama was in Cambodia and met with Prime Minister Singh at the East Asia Summit, he told him, and this is after the election, that India was going to be a big part of his plans for his second term. We also recently had Tom Donilon, the National Security Advisor, at CSIS for a speech about the rebalancing toward Asia. And he said in his remarks that there is a full embrace of India as a rising power by the Obama administration, and that a full embrace of India as a partner in the years ahead. So I think with those things, you just heard me mention the important report of the National Intelligence Council. I think in all these respects, the initiatives that we will be talking about today in the economic realm, which is, by the way, the economic relationship is one that both Ambassador Nancy Powell in Delhi and Ambassador Nirupama Rao here in Washington have called the highest priority for both governments. You'll see references to that in the report in the foreword. So I think that we're all on the same script. The economic relationship is going to be the dominant one for the relationship in the years ahead. And therefore, the Bit and Beyond report, we hope, is going to play into that. Let me mention our speakers. I've already briefly introduced. You have a longer bios in the material as you came in. Matthew Stokes has been a visiting fellow at CSIS for the past 6 months. He is a career Foreign Service officer. His most recent posting before coming as a visiting fellow to CSIS was in Kabul. His next posting will be in Rio de Janeiro. And we think that hopefully your coming to CSIS helped you move forward in your next assignment. So, but from Kabul to Rio is quite a leap. You had a little transition here at CSIS. Ambassador Arun Singh is a career officer in the Indian Foreign Service. Most recently, before coming here to Washington as Deputy Chief of Mission, he was Ambassador to Israel. We've been close colleagues, and we greatly appreciate all that he has been doing. First, as he's had several tours here, but now as DCM, and we've been all with Meera Shankar, the former ambassador, and currently with Neeropama Rao. He has been a key person for building this relationship. Diane Farrell is the Executive Vice President, as I mentioned, of USIBC. Formerly served on the board of the Ex-Im Bank, and as we often talk about, she was also a former mayor of Westport, Connecticut, which is a pretty cool thing to be. So what we'd like to do is to ask Matt to talk for about 10, 15 minutes to give you the highlights of the report and its recommendations, and then Ambassador Singh and Diane Farrell to comment on that, and then we'll open up for questions. So, Matthew.
Thank you, Ambassador Inderfirth. It is a pleasure to be here, back in the Senate office buildings where I used to roam the halls as a staffer on the Finance Committee. I figured next time I was back here when I joined state, I'd be coming back for a confirmation hearing as an ambassador, but sharing the podium with two ambassadors we'll have to do for today. It's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much to our guests for joining us for this event today. It really means a lot to have such strong leaders in the U.S.-India relationship participating today. Thank you to Ambassador Inderfirth for giving me the opportunity at CSIS to work on this report. I also want to note Niraj Patel, the contributing author to the report, is just over there, and he certainly could have been up here because his contributions were significant and couldn't have done it without him. One other bit of introductory throat clearing. I have concluded my visiting fellowship with CSIS, and I'm once again back in the loving embrace of the State Department. So I have to clarify that my comments today are in no way the opinions of the State Department, the administration. There are administration officials here if you'd like to talk about what the administration or the State Department thinks. These are all my own opinions from my research over 6 months with CSIS. So with that said, let's move on to the meat of the report. I came into this fellowship with CSIS sort of a clean slate. The idea that I had proposed was, where should we go next? And I thought it was sort of obvious that the BIT would be the next step. I suppose maybe talking with my colleagues at State, I was taking it for granted that there was broad agreement that what we needed to do next was a bilateral investment treaty, and then that would follow on to other things. And what I found fairly quickly in my research is there's still significant doubt in some quarters about this. Both within the administration, there are some who argue that this shouldn't be a big priority, that we should focus on other things. There are others who argue that BIT is too small and we need to jump straight to something big, we need to think big, and really move forward in a very bold way with this relationship. This is an attempt to make the case strongly for the bilateral investment treaty as the right next step, a step that will yield benefits for both the United States and India. And despite the fact that it's not the most sexy thing to do and maybe shows that I don't have a long-term career at think tanks, it's an argument for incrementalism. We should have a long-term goal. I think the goal in the end is to have something that looks a lot like a free trade agreement, but calling for an FTA or negotiations right now is getting a little ahead of ourselves. And the BIT is a way to start moving now to work on something that will have clear benefits for both sides, continue building trust, continue the positive momentum that we have for the moment in the relationship that we've had for some time, but we need to keep notching victories to keep moving forward. So although incrementalism may not be headline grabbing, I think that's the right way to go right now. There are sort of two sides to this argument, as I mentioned, that those who say, let's announce something big, and that shakes out these smaller things, a bit that might be a chapter someday of a free trade agreement. And there are also those who say, we need to focus on things like the TPP. We can only do so much despite our large and capable bureaucracy. I hope in preparing this report, I've made the case not just for the bit as a good middle road, I suppose, but there are some things we need to do immediately to begin to keep the positive momentum in the relationship. The bit is a good middle term step, but we also need a longer term vision. We need to keep that longer term vision of a full economic partnership in mind as we move forward and see the bit not as a goal, but as the next step in a longer term relationship. I think the crowd today is probably all already very interested and invested in the U.S.-India relationship. So I think it's worth making a quick note that not everyone sees India as the most important goal. A stronger economic relationship with India is the most important goal. So I do spend a little time in the report noting that India is a major economy. There are few major economies that have the potential that India does for the United States to build a strong relationship in the future, to gain the kind of benefits we can from a partnership between two major economies. India, among major economies, is one of the fastest growing and shares our fundamental values: democracy, pluralism, market economy. That's a unique combination of traits in a partner that we can start working with. It really puts India in a unique position as someone that we should prioritize, that we should really be putting some of our limited resources into building that relationship. And India is actually interested in this relationship. There are other large countries that share those values that would rather not be working with us as closely as India has been and will continue to. So it's someone we can work with, we have worked with, and the potential there is great. But so far, despite positive steps, we have been falling short. Our share of trade with India is shrinking. India is growing quickly. It's a pie that's getting bigger, but America's piece of that pie is getting smaller. Our share of FDI in India is not shrinking as quickly, but it's over the last 5 to 10 years, it's also going down as other competitors that have already signed bilateral investment treaties with India or even have more advanced agreements with India gain a bigger share of that market. This isn't a zero-sum game. We can all benefit through further trade and investment, but the United States, in a relativistic analysis, we're losing ground by not being a little more aggressive and moving forward with these kinds of agreements with India. There's a lot of potential there, and we just need to be very conscious and, I would say, aggressive about making the next steps to keep realizing that potential. So, what do we do about that? How do we build that relationship bigger? The report goes through sort of three stages of what we should be doing. First, the immediate steps that we can do even before completing negotiations on anything. Second, what we can be doing to ensure successful completion of a bilateral investment treaty. And finally, the and beyond part of this: what comes next and how do we make sure that we maintain a positive trajectory? First, the short term. To sum up the philosophy on the short term, we should be engaging broadly on every issue we can, using every forum we can, to find the windows of opportunity. And when they open, we need to be in a position ready to jump through them. There are tools like the Trade Policy Forum that has been long running, but has been dormant for a little while now. That can be a useful mechanism to get through some of the smaller issues. We can get small successes there. Logistics can be difficult. Important people from two major countries are busy. issues can be frustrating because we're not going to agree on everything. But as Wayne Gretzky once said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And we should be continuing forward with the Trade Policy Forum, getting back into the mechanisms that exist and finding opportunities to get small victories that keep building momentum in the relationship. We're already talking about a bilateral investment treaty, so that recommendation is not revolutionary, but we should be aggressive about the schedule on that. And that means scheduling talks regularly. It means doing as quickly as possible. Negotiation in itself, doing a lot of meetings doesn't mean it's gonna get done, but that process continues to build trust, continues to build understanding, and making sure that it's happening frequently and purposefully will help us get to that goal. Finally, one other thing that we are doing and should be doing more of is state-to-state relationships. The states in India are really the engine of change. There's some innovative thinking happening in the states and some places that are really aggressive about foreign investment. And I think we've seen some successes from trade delegations. We should be doing more of those. We should be using the resources of the federal government to make connections, to keep governors in the United States connected with their counterparts in India. And again, engage on all levels, and when a window of opportunity comes up, we're in the right place. We've already got the relationships and the understanding to move forward with it. Moving on to the bit itself, which is the headline piece of the report. The reason why we're talking about the bit, it's attainable. It's something that we can actually get done, I think, in the short term. I'm glad that Senator Warner was willing to depart from his talking points and say, we can get this done in a year. I think we can get this done in a year. That's one of the things that I probably wouldn't be able to say if I was working at the State Department, not wearing my CSIS hat. But we need to set an ambitious ambitious goal for getting through this negotiation. Right now, I understand that India is undertaking its own review of the bit. We need to be engaging on all levels to try to move that process forward so we can get back to the negotiating table and get this done in the shorter term. I think before the next Indian elections is a reasonable goal. Aggressive, but if we don't have an aggressive goal, then it's the kind of thing that can stretch on, and we need to keep this moving forward and keep notching victories. Among the kind of attainable things we can do, a bit is significant. It's something that will demonstrate real benefits for both countries. The interest in multi-brand retail, the interest in FDI and insurance shows that there are American companies that are eager to get into the Indian market. And India, frankly, needs that level of investment. They need the foreign investment to come in to keep financing deficits for one thing, but also to keep growing at the pace they need to rise their population out of poverty. There's a lot of strength in India, but they can't do it alone. Lastly, it's timely. The bit is something that is under discussion right now. Now is our moment, from the US perspective, to engage with India about this. As they're undertaking this review, if they come out of that review saying, we're not interested in any more treaties that involve investor-state dispute resolution, that's going to put us in a tough spot. So we need to be having this conversation now. They're undertaking an internal review, and they, as is their right, we undertook a lengthy internal review of the bit as well. But I don't think that means it's time to wait and see what shakes out of that. We need to be engaging with the Indian government as broadly as we can. Furthermore, we need to be engaging beyond the government. In my research trips to India, I talked with many representatives of business that are still really on the fence about this. We should be making a case and building alliances with those business groups, demonstrating how this is beneficial for both sides. This is not about American competition coming in and shutting down Indian competitors. This is about partnerships. This is about technology transfer. This is about the positive spillover effects that having a sophisticated investor come into your country can lead to. So there is a case to be made. We need to be aggressive in making it, not just with the government, but building a coalition across India that's interested in these issues. Among the issues that need to be negotiated, the report goes into more detail. Most of them are things that we have surmounted in previous BIT negotiations, or India has surmounted in previous BIT negotiations. Despite the fact the U.S. hasn't done many BITs recently, I think there's a model we can look at how to get most of these things done. Things that will really shut things down, though, are if India decides they're not interested in investor-state investment or investor-state dispute resolution, and if the United States says we're not going to talk about visas. So we both need to meet in the middle on that. I think there's visas is obviously a charged issue here, but I think there's room to discuss that and a way to find some kind of language we can agree on. Looking at the longer term, the BIT can't just be our final goal. We have to look at it as a step. And I see it as one portion of an FTA. We're not ready to do an FTA negotiation tomorrow, but we can negotiate something that would be a portion of that FTA. Then we move on to what's next after a bit. I think taking a sector-by-sector approach would be positive. There are a lot of sectors where we have positive relationships already that we can really unlock some potential. IT is the most obvious one. Let's update the ITA, a more modern set of goods covered by that. Let's try to expand that to services on a bilateral basis with India. Those are the kinds of smaller things that, you know, we don't have to choose from a menu of we do an FTA or we do nothing. We do a bit or we do nothing. This is a big enough relationship and an important enough relationship that we can think outside the box of the kinds of things we've done in the past. Let's keep building sort of chapter by chapter and eventually get to something that looks a lot like an FTA, and then see what happens after that. But I think it's an important enough relationship that we need to think a little bit outside of the box of the way we've done trade agreements before. That's challenging. That's a tough lift for us. That's a tough lift for India. But I think it's a big enough and important enough relationship that it's worth the effort. So thank you very much. I look forward to hearing from our other panelists.
Matt, thank you so much. Great overview. And let's go directly to Ambassador Singh for his perspective. Arun?
Thank you, Rick. Well, first I wanted to thank Senator Warner for his leadership in the caucus and for the various initiatives that the caucus has taken. So Mark, please report that back to the senator so I remain in his good books. Rick, thank you for all your leadership in the CSIS related to work on India. And I think clearly there is regular and high quality work and stimulating thought going on. And we're all engaging with that and also the work being done at the USIBC. I wanted to compliment Matt for his very detailed, thorough work that he has done. And it's clear from reading it, even if I don't necessarily agree with all your sort of conclusions, some of the difficult scenarios that you've described there, some of which I disagree with. But it's clear that a fair amount of very detailed work has gone into this. And you've met people, you've discussed with people, you've worked deeply on the issues and substance of the issues involved. So congratulations on the very good work done. Now, in terms of some of the comments and the issues highlighted here, let me just make a few points. And it's clear from all the comments we heard that there is a sense here that the rise of India is also in US interest. There is also a sense that the success of India as a functioning, multilingual, multi-religious democracy is in global interest, in terms of the message that it gives to people, communities all over the world. And there is also a sense that a consolidation of the India-US economic relationship is in our mutual interest. And therefore, whatever we do, we have to be guided by these broad perspectives. And looking at this, we also need to factor in that as we pursue our engagement with different countries, the aspirations of India and the people of India are also very important. And clearly we have challenges. There has been a certain amount of progress in India, but there are challenges. We have 400 million people in India who do not have access to commercial energy. We have a large number of people in India living below the poverty line. So as we pursue our own economic options and economic engagement with different countries, how do we deal with these challenges will clearly be one of the motivating factors. So when we look at our relationship with the United States in the economic sense, what we are trying to do is visualize a relationship for the future. What should be the India-US economic relationship as part of the partnership for the future? And then how do we use the different instruments, whether it is the bilateral investment treaty or some kind of trade arrangement, which supports, encourages, enables, maximizes the potential of such an arrangement. Going from there, if you look at the structure of the two economies, one of the defining features is that in the US, clearly, services is the dominant sector. In India, very unusual for a developing country, also services is the dominant sector. So clearly, the first thing we need to do is how do we look more deeply at the services sector to see a potential for expansion of trading and other cooperation possibilities. But going beyond that, in India, clearly, we need to expand the manufacturing sector because services we've done well, but the employment generation potential of the services sector tends to be somewhat limited. And given the size of our population, given the fact that there is in India so far what is referred to as a demographic dividend, where we have a large number of young people with the potential to be educated, to be skilled and brought into the workforce, how do we give them employment capacities? For that, we need to expand the manufacturing sector in India. So if we are looking at expanding the India-US trade relationship, of course, the US should be able to sell more to India over a period of time. But India must have the capacity to buy more. So as we build capacity in India to buy more for elsewhere, to trade more, there will be potential for expansion of this relationship. So already, India's economy has globalized. You know, there's tendency to think of Indian economy as focusing just on domestic demand, which has been there. But it has globalized. More than 50% of our GDP is being generated by the external sector. So that's an important part. And therefore, as we expand capacities in India to trade, buy more, there'll be opportunities. So I think in that framework, if we look at the future, I'm sure there would be more, but I can, as a start, identify five sectors where we should work more and try to expand potential. One, for example, would be energy. India wants to buy shale gas from the US, and we can't do that very easily now. In terms of renewables, solar, wind, and other renewable areas, there is great potential for partnership, for trade, for technology partnership, for manufacturing partnerships. How do we exploit that? There was a reference that Senator Warner made to our challenge in power generation. How do we look at that? How do we look at new generation electricity grids? What is the potential there for partnership? So I think we need to visualize this. Going from energy to healthcare. In healthcare segment, in certain areas, India has done very well. But in certain areas, we have tremendous challenges. We also bring new concepts, such as holistic healthcare, life cycle healthcare issues. We are very good in certain kinds of research in healthcare, in vaccine development. US is outstanding in research in other areas. Now, how can we work closer together in the healthcare segment so that we can expand opportunity? How can India contribute to lowering healthcare costs in the United States, which is a major issue here? So I think that's another area we could look at. Education. Clearly, there's going to be huge expansion in India in the education sector as we try to take the present level of access to higher education from 17% now to 30% within the next couple of decades. And as we build hundreds of new universities, tens of thousands of new colleges, what is the potential for partnership in that and building from the skills generated? Infrastructure. Today, only about 30% of Indians live in urban areas. Within the next two decades, the estimates are that 65% of Indians would be living in urban areas. So we are looking at some 350 to 400 million more people going to urban areas. We need a whole look at the kind of urban infrastructure that we are going to build, not only in terms of roads, but telecom, energy supplies, the kind of buildings. What is the potential for trade and manufacturing and other partnerships in that sector? And last but not least, agriculture. Clearly, India needs to do a fair amount of technology and infrastructure arrangement in the agriculture sector. And again, what is the potential there? So these are some of the things that I wanted to flag So whether we look at a BIT or whether we look at any kind of a trade arrangement, first we have to have a clear sense of where we want to take this relationship. Identify specific areas where there is potential, where we need to work together, and then see how does a bilateral investment treaty or a trading arrangement enable that process. So one, if we fit it into that, I'm sure we will have tremendous success, and to see how it meets the aspirations of people in the US, but aspirations of people also in India. So in that context, I would say, as just two concluding thoughts, that the BIT should not be seen as a catch-all. It cannot deal with all issues. It cannot try to generate solutions to all policy requirements. It has to be what it is. Second, it should not be seen as a standalone. It's not something that's out there just by itself. It has to be in the context of where we want to take the relationship, in the context of where India wants to go, where we want to take the India-US relationship. So if once we have that in mind, we'll be able to achieve quicker and far greater success. And although I didn't want to comment specifically on Matt's report, but I couldn't not comment one reference there so that it doesn't give a misleading picture, that he has referred to this issue related to investor-state dispute resolution mechanism. And on that, Matt, I must say that the concerns you have expressed from our perspective are not really well-founded. So let me leave it at that.
Yes. To be discussed.
Good morning. Everybody needs to take a breath at this point. I know we've all been sitting for a while and listening. It is wonderful to see all of you. I'm delighted to see so many USIBC members here, as well as former colleagues from US government who are still fighting the good fight. Arun Venkataram is here, who just got back from India. He's with US Trade, US Trade and Development Agency, USTR. And I was just catching up with him to hear what he was learning in direct conversation. And then, obviously, our good friends and colleagues from the U.S. Embassy, including our most esteemed colleague here on the panel, Ambassador Arun K. Singh. And we know that Ambassador Rao has been very engaged in all bilateral trade discussions. And when I saw her recently at the America-Indian Foundation dinner a few weeks ago, she expressly verbalized her interest in BIT particularly. So it's wonderful to have everybody in the room. I want to start by congratulating Rick and Matt and the entire team at CSIS, because this is a wonderful comprehensive document, one that clearly can spur debate, which I think is good and healthy. And again, that sort of, you know, gets the blood flowing and the oxygen moving here. From a USIBC perspective, we've obviously been very interested and very supportive of the relationship continuing in any number of different manners and fashions. And obviously, a BIT is something that's very attractive to our members, because the basic fundamental concept behind a BIT is that it does provide a framework, that it does provide a safety net, as it were, as companies are engaging in investment, whether it's in the United States here or obviously whether it's in India. As one of our members said when Ambassador Singh hosted us back in September, where we had a number of USIBC members, as one of them said, it's sort of the good housekeeping seal of approval is the way we look at it. Both our speakers and obviously Ambassador Indofurth and the Senator acknowledge that a BIT is not an end, nor is it necessarily a beginning. I mean, the reality is that this relationship has been growing as all relationships. Sometimes it's fits and starts, but when something is truly worthwhile, then that's the investment that we make. We make the investment in time. We make that personal commitment because it's something that we truly believe in. I'm thrilled to hear Senator Warner speak really very personally about his commitment to the caucus and his belief in the benefits of this relationship moving forward. From a USIBC perspective, we have a couple of priorities. I think Ambassador Singh very eloquently just laid out sectors that are of critical interest and importance, as well as providing opportunities. Critical interest and importance in India, also providing vast opportunities from a business perspective when you talk about U.S. companies and their investment. And I should say that the U.S.-India Business Council has members who are India-based, And so we're very pleased to have Reliance and Tata and SR and other Indian companies. So we actually look at this bit both from the standpoint of how it's benefiting our U.S.-based companies, but equally so how it's benefiting Indian companies as they look to expand their investments here in the United States. As Ambassador Singh spoke about the fact that outside investment continues to increase as India's economy grows and as their companies become more multi-global in scope. And so all of those are very important. However, we also have to underscore that a good bit is also very valuable. There is that time element. There is that, you know, sense that we want to get something done, have a deliverable, you know, have it ready. There is merit to the argument that if you let something go too long, it becomes stale and loses its value and loses its momentum. But we want to make sure that as these negotiations go forward and as we take into account the sensitivities on both sides, why is this bit good for the United States? Why is this bit good for India? That we have the kind of dialogue that will result in a high quality in a substantive bit. And that was reflected in the caucus's letter to the president a year ago, in fact, this month. That's been reflected in communications from organizations to State Department, to U.S. Trade Representative as well. What we would like to do at USIBC, what we offer to do to move this process forward, especially given all the very thoughtful work that's been put into this document and to you know, others among us who have been giving thoughtful consideration to the importance of this as another emblematic example of the strength of ties between the two countries, is to really focus in on the coalition part that Matt talked about in his opening remarks. We do have these extraordinary companies, both in the United States as well in India. And we need to make sure that we generate enthusiasm and support and commitment to the process. We need to make sure that we provide the kind of input that Matt described, also to have the exchange back and forth on whether we agree that we see the problem in quite the same way and therefore the solution that's going to fit the problem. But we pledge that part of what we want to do is to obviously involve our member companies and reach out across this vast, you know, globe of ours, working with CII. I know that our good friend Sandhya is here from CII, working with FICCI, working with AmChamps, working with other organizations in India so that we can bring a coalition together, because as was said early on, no one in this room has to be convinced of the value of the U.S.-India relationship. No one at the White House needs to be convinced of it either. Most members, as evidenced by the fact that it's the largest caucus in Congress, most of our elected officials understand and get it. However, on a daily basis, there are so many, I mean, there are thousands of distractions that can take people's focus and energy away from something like a bit negotiation. That the purpose of this coalition is also to make sure that, to the best of our ability, we're able to keep this opportunity front and center. And so part of what we can do is, as we define those issues, those items that are of greatest importance to our companies and our members, so that this will be a valuable bit, we are going to be reaching out. We are going to be providing that input, that feedback, and that encouragement to our officials, both in Washington as well as in Delhi, to see this through to a proper conclusion. But also to understand that it is part of a process. It is part of a long road that will enable us to continue to add greater depth to the relationship. And at the end of the day, as with all things that we do that we really believe and feel a commitment toward, this really is about improving the quality of life of the individuals for whom we have responsibility or have concern. And so when Ambassador Singh talks about the importance of that demographic dividend, and he talks about the opportunities and the challenges that he laid out, whether it's education, infrastructure, access to power, et cetera, that's really what we're all working toward. And I think that's what gives us the energy and the stamina to keep going, to keep believing, and to assure that at the end of this process, we can check the box, we got this one done, it was difficult, it took longer than it should have, but we got it done, and now we move on to the other. And we don't necessarily limit ourselves to just the strict confines of the definitions of a BIT or a BIPA in India, but that we take advantage of those opportunities to have those important conversations that may actually be side conversations, including addressing the issue of visas right now, which is a critical problem, and one that we need to be engaging our U.S. government friends about, especially right now. But I think that through this process, this commitment, this document, what we intend to do taking the process forward, my hope is that whether we reconvene in a year, we reconvene in 18 months, is the date that I think Matt has in his book here, we'll all be able to celebrate an effort that was truly worthwhile and that will truly make the difference in the lives of millions, hundreds of millions of people potentially.
Great.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you, Diane. We have a few moments, and we'd like to see if there are questions or comments that any of you have. And I think we have microphones in the back, and there's a question over here. How are we going to do this, Nick? Should people come to the mic? People should come to the mic. And it's over here and over there. Okay. Sir, please, if you could identify yourself.
Yes, I am Alessandro Pio.
You would like to
I am the head of the Asian Development Bank office in Washington, D.C. And I think you have made a strong case for why the BIT is important. My question would be related to one of the details, which is the infrastructure sector. I think the ambassador has quite eloquently said the importance of infrastructure for manufacturing and urban development. My question would be, and we've been working very actively in India to promote the private-public partnership in getting private sector involved in providing some of this infrastructure, not only at the central level, at the state level. My question, and I guess to the both sides, to the Indian side, but also to the U.S. side, what are some of the constraints that you find in promoting participation of the private sector in the development infrastructure, but also more importantly, what are some of the solutions that you see could, through the BIT, could lead to the alleviation of these constraints?
Matt, Arun, Diane, if you could all add a comment to that, because I think that all of you would have a perspective there.
Sure.
Go ahead, Matt.
I think the infrastructure sector is obviously one of the major opportunities that is thirsty on the Indian side, thirsty for capital, and on the American side, we have lots of expertise and know-how that can go into building a stronger infrastructure sector there. It might not surprise you to hear, I think a BIT would make a big difference in that. There is, talking with, for example, GE people in India, very interested in doing a lot more business in India, but there are concerns about uncertainty, about not having the kind of stable climate that they feel they need to make a larger investment. They are very bullish on India, want to do a lot more, but especially at the time I was there, there seemed to be some wavering, some going back and forth on some issues. You do something like a BIT and you get the more, the international treaty aspect makes it a lot harder to change. It makes it a lot harder to go back on that decision. So I think doing those kinds of agreements that provide more stability will increase opportunities, will increase confidence. And I think a lot of the issues are related to confidence. We need to keep sending signals that India is open for business, or India needs to keep sending signals that they're open for business. The recent reforms are a great step in that direction. I think being willing to commit to an international bilateral investment treaty would send that signal even more strongly.
I think if you look at infrastructure, you then have to disaggregate which sector you're looking at. If you're looking at transport, it's different. If you're looking at telecom, it's different issues. If you're looking at power, it's different. For example, in power, one of the issues we have is that many of our distribution companies have losses that they have to deal with. So it's a different set of issues for different areas in infrastructure. But in all of them, the stakeholders are in dialogue. And together we have to find a way forward. But one point I must make in response to Matt's comment here, that, you know, I keep hearing this from time to time, that India must show it is open for business. It's a surprising comment for us. You know, 50% of our GDP is generated by the international sector. And our global engagement of the economy has been widening. So just because one or two policy issues, there may be disagreement, I don't think we should move from there to say, is India open for business? Then we could be asking that for every country in the world. Are you open for business? I mean, those could be raised anywhere. So I don't think we should do that kind of categorization. But on the infrastructure, I think each sector, we have to deal with it.
My quick response would be that back in early October, our President Ron Summers and our Chairman Ajay Banga visited India and had a very good conversation with the Minister of Finance. And it's very evident from the question that he posed to Ron and Ajay and that has been posed subsequently by our good friend Minister Mohan at the embassy, along with many others, the Law and Justice Minister, just about every top official visiting from India asked the question, tell us why some of these infrastructure projects are hung up. Tell us why, in some cases, there are hesitations from U.S. companies to become involved. And the quick answer is land acquisition is a big one. We can get into the technicalities on some of the fundamental challenges that are faced literally on the ground in India. But one is, in terms of investment, and this is where the BIT becomes so important, it's that sense of confidence and security that in the event that the project doesn't go smoothly for one way or another, there are mechanisms, rules that are set in place, and arbitration comes to mind as a perfect example, to assure that if there is a dispute, that parties, that the dispute can be worked out fairly between both parties. And in fact, India has had experience with that with bits that they already have with other countries where there have been arbitrations. They stand as an important example that, again, a structure that provides a certain sense of security to both sides is one that can lead to successful resolution of conflict. So that's the reason that I think a BIT could really help in terms of attracting investment when it comes to infrastructure projects specifically. And, you know, I think it will make a difference to a lot of our companies who still have concerns about transparency, who still have concerns about lingering contract disputes even after a contract has been settled. And again, it's not a catch-all for everything, but I do believe that from an arbitration standpoint, this would be an excellent step forward.
Over here, let's take a couple of questions at once, and then we'll get responses here.
Sure, good morning. My name is Beth Offenbecker. I'm with the Virginia Tech School of Public and International Affairs. We have a research partnership we just began with the Indian Institute of Technology in Kanpur around sustainability, which is one topic I haven't heard discussed. When we think about Rio, when we think about Copenhagen and the issues, certainly with any expansion of economic efforts, the social responsibility elements to our larger community is something that I think is an important dimension to consider. I'm wondering if you could just speak briefly to the dimension of sustainability and how it relates to the BIT. Thank you.
Please.
Hi.
Then we'll do two over here, and then we will conclude.
Joe Battistelli, Global Trade Watch. Ambassador Singh, you mentioned in response to some of the comments made that your opposition to investor state might not be as adamant as we might have previously heard. I was wondering if you could just expand on that and speak to that a little bit at some point.
Okay, let's do this, the education, and Arun, I think you've got a chance to further clarify that issue. Go ahead.
On the sustainability issue, I welcome the comment. I think those are definitely, I don't see where the person went, but definitely important issues that I care about, that we all care about. I don't see those as directly related to an investment treaty. To the extent that an investment treaty would hopefully spur increased economic activity, that definitely has concerns that you need to keep in mind in terms of environmental impacts, in terms of sharing the gains from the economy equitably across society. I think that's a much bigger issue to tackle, and I don't think I would shy away from attempting to increase economic activity out of concerns that we might have too much and it wouldn't have positive results or might have side effects. I think India is very conscious about making sure that growth happens in a pro-poor manner, in an equitably distributed manner. And I think that's going to continue, whether American investors are fully engaged through the mechanisms of a BIT or not.
Thank you. I think in India there is consciousness related to sustainability. We have a national action plan on sustainability, but more than that, in my own comments when I spoke about energy issues, including renewable energy, clearly that is linked to the whole concept of sustainability. So I don't see that not being emphasized in any way. On the investor-state issue, I think one has to understand that the whole exercise and sort of thinking in India is how to bring greater clarity and precision to this issue. Because investors, of course, must have protection, but all of you would agree that the state must have protection also. And we have done several BITs in good faith, but of late there has been experience from our perspective of misuse of those provisions. So there's a need to bring in greater clarity and precision to this and not to take it in a direction that some comments in this report suggest. And so that's why I am in disagreement with what has been mentioned there. Thank you.
Two questions from over here.
Sure. My name is Nissim Rubin. I'm the American Jewish Committee's Program Director on Indian Jewish American Relations. For Ambassador Singh, sir, when you took office your post in Israel, trade was around $2.5 billion. When you left, it was $5 billion, doubled in your tenure around that. So how was it? What are the challenges that you face here? And the second is for Diane. I wanted to let you know, Diane, that we have been good friends of the U.S.-India Business Council. We have a very powerful Latino-Jewish coalition on advocating immigration reform. It has been recognized by the President's Chief of Staff. And we hope to build a similar coalition with the Indian American community in advocating immigration reforms so that we ensure that the Indian brain power that comes out of US universities comes into our economy here to generate more entrepreneurship and jobs. So we look forward to working with you, Diane. Thank you.
And then the second gentleman here.
Thank you. My name is Alex Lawson. I'm a reporter with Inside U.S. Trade. This is for Ambassador Singh. With regard to market access in BITs, the U.S. has historically favored a negative list approach, meaning you presume that everything is open except for the sectors or markets that you specifically list as having carve-outs. Given the priorities that you have for boosting manufacturing, before you even get to talking about sectors to open up, is India even amenable to that negative list approach?
I thought Dan would go first. Well, in response to Nissim's question, Dan, of course, advised me that I should take full credit. But, no ambassador, no embassy should take credit for what's happening in the broader or entire credit. So our role is to facilitate larger forces that are operating, and clearly larger forces and business interests and other things were taking India-Israel relations in a certain direction, and the embassy plays a role in facilitating that. So I would be hesitant in taking credit for that. But in terms of negative list or any other list, look, these are issues to be negotiated. And I'm not sitting here in a negotiating forum. So all these issues will be discussed, negotiated. And the fact is that India has BITs with 82 countries. Obviously, those countries found interest in having a BIT with India. And so similarly, when we look at negotiation with the US, clearly an expanding partnership with the US is in India's interest, as it is in U.S. interest. And therefore, we would be approaching the discussions in that framework and to see that mindful of the need for meeting the aspirations of the Indian people, what else can we do to take the relationship forward? And our negotiators would come to the table with that in mind. But I can't tie down their hands in how they will approach the various issues. Thank you.
I think just to reply to Nissim as it relates to what we call movement of skilled professionals and this whole opportunity for two-way trade and the kind of intellectual capital that needs to be able to flow back and forth. It's a priority for USIBC. I also take heart more broadly in this what appears to be a renewed interest on the part of the Congress to be looking at immigration reform again. And so I do think that there is a particular opportunity for us to be talking to our elected representatives as it relates to understanding the importance from a competitive standpoint of our ability to allow for movement both ways and to move away from this sort of job protectionist political mantra to really looking at job creation and how both sides can benefit by having a more fluid transfer of intellectual capital through our respective employees.
One important thing I failed to note on the sustainability issue, there is a chapter in the model language of the U.S. bit on environmental and labor issues, requiring both parties not to to dismantle or derogate from their environmental laws or labor laws in order to attract investment. So that is an issue that's addressed. It's not probably the main way to address sustainability issues of economic growth, but it's not an issue that's ignored in BIT treaties.
Okay. Let me conclude something that Diane just said, that this could be a good time on immigration visa issues and the rest. I think the timing is right on all of these issues we're talking about right now. We've had our elections in this country. Hopefully we'll get through the current fiscal cliff issues, demonstrating that we're not in policy paralysis as we've been for some time. We've got a new team coming in. There'll be a new Secretary of State, new Secretary of Treasury, new Secretary of Commerce. So new team, new ideas, new energy, enthusiasm. On the Indian side, the multi-brand FDI retail decision taken by the Parliament indicates that there's some wind in the sails there. So I think the timing is good for us to grapple with this. And do remember, there have been questions about can you put a time frame on a bit. Do remember that last June, Secretary Clinton and then External Affairs Minister Krishna, at their strategic dialogue, called for an expeditious conclusion to negotiations on a bit. So there is already some push there to get this done as quickly as possible, and I think within the next year that should be possible. And I should mention something that Matt said in his comments. You know, we're not alone here in seeking to move forward with India on these agreements. I was in Canada 3 weeks ago, and in the Canadian newspapers there was a good amount of talk about concluding a CEPA, a Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement with India in 2013. I think India is now pursuing an agreement with ASEAN on investment and services, a FTA with. So India is moving ahead on these, and it would be a good idea, I think, for the United States to recognize that if we don't want to see market share continue to drop, we need to get more involved in this. So with those comments, let me again thank, I see Mark Bruner is back. Mark, thank you, Senator Warner, your office for arranging this great venue. I'd like to thank Diane and Arun for commenting and being a part of this. And finally, I'd like to express my appreciation to Matt Stokes as the principal author, being with us for 6 months. You're welcome back at any time. We are talking about the Bit and Beyond report. I think you heard his comments at the beginning. He's going off to Rio. I think there's a Rio and beyond for Matt Stokes, and I think that that beyond may include coming back here to the Senate at some point for that confirmation ambassadorial hearing. I'd put my money on that. That'd be a good bet. So, Matt, thank you very much, and thank you. All of you for being here.
Thank you.
No, that's quite all right.